takes out the navigation a little bit.
This is where our commission normally meets, so we can do that regularly. Sometimes we have to, like,
All right. We do have enough for a quorum. Let's give it 2 more minutes.
Okay.
Just because we're in a different location, it's fine. When we do a Pledge of Allegiance, we're going to do it in this direction, which is toward our flag. We know there's not a flag in here. So we'll just use our imagination and go ahead and move the chamber. Starting a little late because it's like obviously not
funny. Yeah, Trevor does. Is he here?
Oh, no, they're at the location.
I think that's it.
It's not open yet. So we have Nava and we have Dolorosa.
Okay, let's not have my glass here.
Start next minute or so. Call to order the August 28th, 2019 meeting of the Chula Vista Planning Commission. Madam Secretary, can you begin with the roll call?
Yes. Commissioner Burroughs?
Present.
Commissioner Milburn?
Present.
Commissioner Torres?
Present.
Commissioner Zager?
Present.
Chair Gutierrez?
Present.
And Commissioners De La Rosa and Commissioner Nava have not arrived yet.
So what's the first steps? Okay, we'll begin with the next. We're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance. I'll use your imagination. Commissioner Milburn, we begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening. Before beginning tonight's meeting, I'd like to make a few introductory remarks. The Planning Commission is comprised of 7 citizens who serve without pay and are appointed by the City Council. The Commission has responsibility for considering general plan amendments, rezonings, conditional use permits, precise plans, and subdivisions. Some Commission actions are final unless appealed by the City Council. The Chair will call each case by number, and staff will provide an overview of the proposal. The public hearing is open, and if you wish to speak on any item, we ask that you fill out a speaker slip and submit it to our secretary. When addressing the commission, please give your name and address, and we ask that you limit remarks to 5 minutes. Upon completion of testimony, the public hearing will be closed, and the commission will deliberate and act on each item. Should a request be denied or anyone wish to appeal our recommendation, the appeal must be filed in writing with the planning department within 10 calendar days of our decision. An appeal fee is required. Any visual aids that are used during staff's presentation are to assist the commission in a clear understanding of the proposal. Visual aids that are used during the applicant's presentation do not necessarily represent staff's position or endorsement of the presentation and are solely reflective of the presenter's views. We ask that all cell phones be turned off and appreciate your attendance and participation at this meeting. Which brings us to item number one, the approval of minutes from July 24th. Commissioner Torres, seconded by Commissioner Milburn. I'm going to do it old school with the votes. So it's going to be, okay, so all those in favor, vote aye.
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 That's all those present voting aye for the record. Brings us to item number two, which is an update on the city's climate action plan. Corey Downs from staff, the conservation specialist too, who will be actually, excuse me, we do public comments before we do agenda items. Any public comments? Okay, seeing none, asking a second time. Closed. So no public comments, and then we're going to go back to Corey.
Corey? Yeah, so at the last Planning Commission meeting, a request was made to have an action item regarding climate action plans. We have Corey Downs, who's our expert on climate action plans, and here to ask him whatever questions you want. If we can maybe take 15, 20 minutes total just to go through, and then
Thank you very much for inviting me to speak about the climate action plan. We have a presentation here that kind of has a little bit of background about how we developed the climate action plan and then jumps into some implementation highlights. But that being said, if there's questions, feel free to let me know. I'll definitely kind of dive into whatever the interest is. So first, overview of how was this climate action plan created. It was started with the Climate Change Working Group, which is a working group of the Sustainability Commission. They held 11 meetings in 2013-2014, created a list of recommendations, 12 recommendations that were then provided to city staff and incorporated into the climate action plan as the objectives, which then staff created actions that will create or to achieve the objectives. The city's climate action plan is not a CEQA certified document and cannot be used for development streamlining or CEQA streamlining. That is a little bit different than some of the other climate action plans in other parts of the region. Looking at the emissions behind the climate action plan, our most recent inventory is for 2014. We're working on our 2016 inventory, but getting some of the transportation data, it is complex. Some of the models and analysis that SANDAG has to do, and so there is some delays about that. But looking at our 2014 greenhouse gas inventory, we can see we have decreased emissions since 2012 and our baseline 2005, but we still are above our 15% below 2005 reduction goal, which is about equal to our 1990 emission levels, which is also the state's 2020 reduction goal. So you can see we have made reductions, but there still is more reductions to be had. Also, it's important to call out and point out that there was some methodology change between 2012 and 2014. As I mentioned, some of the SANDAG modeling is based on the series models that they provide, and 2012 and 2014 were different series, so there could be some kind of conversion. Some of the emission reductions could be from the data behind it, and so we're really eager to see how our 2016 inventory kind of stacks up and confirms that we are seeing emission reductions overall from the community. Also, here's our population totals. As you can see, our population has increased as emissions have decreased. So that does drive down our per capita greenhouse gas emissions to, in 2014, it was about a little over four metric tons, which does align well with the state's draft per capita reduction goals. But as we're looking at this, we see that there will still need to be additional reductions to meet the state's goals. So looking at the actions that are in the plan, there is 92 total actions that fall under each of the objectives that the city council adopted in the climate action plan. Of those, about 58% are complete or ongoing, which means they were complete, but it wasn't like a one-time thing, such as our free home energy evaluations. Those are done, and we are still going on with those. 32% of the actions are still in progress, and so there is still a lot of work to be done. The Climate Action Plan was adopted in 2017, and it was fairly ambitious, and there is a lot of actions and work to be done in there. So, we would not expect all these actions to be complete by now. And there still are some that are ongoing, need work, or in the early steps or early stages. And the link there is our Climate Action Plan website, where you can download a similar presentation that was provided to Climate Change Working Group, as well as a PDF of each action and its status. So if you wanted to look at more specific actions, that link right there provides that information. And my contact information will be at the end of this, or feel free to connect or reach out to staff, and I'm happy to chat about any of the specific measures if anyone has questions about those. But overall, there's a lot of work that we have achieved. I'll dive into a little bit of the sectors, which is how the Climate Action Plan is organized, and look a little bit more specifically at which actions we've completed and which ones we're still working on. For the water sector, one of the big improvements that we've made is reducing the amount of water that's used in outdoor irrigation. We updated our model landscape ordinance in 2015. And it's also important to call out there, that was a 2015 action. There was, like I said, the Climate Change Working Group recommendations were created in 2014. The Climate Action Plan wasn't adopted until 2017. That didn't mean we weren't working on those actions. So there were some actions that were actually complete before the Climate Action Plan was adopted, just because of how it's rolled out. And this was one of them. This was also kind of brought on by the drought. And so there was reasons why we wanted to take that action as soon as possible. At the more local or municipal level, our staff are working with community volunteers to replace irrigation controllers and irrigation nozzles to low water versions and smarter control with leak detection, so that we can better manage a lot of the sports turfs that do use a lot of water, but making sure that we're where we're getting activity out of that. We want to be using that water, just using it efficiently, and that is at like I said, municipal parks. Majority of the actions will be focused on community level scale, but where appropriate, I do like calling out the municipal action and letting community know that these are things that the city is also doing at our facilities, as well as recommending or requiring community members to take action for. Some actions that we're still working on, requiring water saving retrofits, definitely requiring it is a little bit more of a challenge, and we're trying to create both the political as well as funding sources to enact some of those requirements. Develop permitting and promotional guides for water reuse, so we can encourage more of that water reuse. And then again, we've done a lot of actions at city facilities. We want to let the community members that enjoy those facilities know about the actions that the city has taken, so they can see that we are, again, leading by example, and letting them know that these are things that we're doing as well. So those are some of the ongoing actions that we're working with at the water sector. And like I said, this will be a pretty brief overview. There's more, 90 or so actions in there. But if you do have questions about others that aren't on here, feel free to let me know. In the energy sector, there's been some recent activity around the adoption of an LED ordinance for exterior commercial buildings. That was adopted last year, and to date, 56 property or 56 projects applications have been triggered by that requirement for higher efficiency, typically LED lighting outside. This was one of the rare opportunities where we got to take something to City Council that was very cost effective. In a lot of the situations, the cost of the bulb that we were requiring was less expensive to install than the cost of the more traditional more traditional bulb that they might put in. So, you know, some of the cost effectiveness for that requirement was really good. But it is still good to show the consultants and or contractors and developers that, you know, where we can get more energy out of the buildings, we'll definitely be looking to do that. And that should, or that will sunset at the end of this year, because basically what we did was we early adopted the 2019 code cycle requirements for lighting efficiency standards. So at the end of this year, our REACH code will kind of go away, but it will be replaced by the code, which is in most situations the same as what our REACH code was. So we just kind of brought it on early. We'll also be working on community choice aggregation or community choice energy. We've taken some items recently to City Council to provide the presentation of our CCA feasibility study, which showed that a CCA program in Chula Vista is economically feasible and does provide benefits, as well as identifying the risks of a program and ways to mitigate those. And got direction from City Council to pursue a regional JPA CCA program. So we've been working with the City of San Diego, and we'll be coming back on September 10th to have City Council potentially adopt a JPA resolution, as well as a CCA resolution, which would create the JPA and formally let the California Public Utility Commission know that we want to form a CCA down here in Chula Vista. And then finally, on the item, the solar PV requirement is a state requirement that's going to come into effect starting January of next year that will effectively require solar PV on all new residential projects. It's only covering the electricity of the building, not the natural gas, so they're not net zero energy homes, but it is a big step closer to net zero energy homes. And as the grid gets cleaner and cleaner, which is another reason we want to take the CCA action to ensure that the grid gets as clean as it can, as quickly as it can, we know that, you know, more the emissions from the electric side of homes will go down and down, and then we can really focus on the remaining emissions that are there. Also, more on the municipal side, but I also want to call out the SDG&E Energy Station that was launched at the South Bay Library. This is similar to the Qualcomm Innovation Station that's here at the Civic Center Library, and it serves as a learning lab for, I believe, either 5th or 6th grade classes to come in and learn about information and careers in energy and sustainability, and that was funded with SDG&E. We're currently working to provide, require energy efficiency retrofits in existing, or energy efficiency upgrades in existing buildings that have alterations and additions. Again, anytime we require something from stakeholders and residents, we want to make sure there's lots of support and rollout to that. So we are, we're working on that, but don't have a firm date for when that would roll out yet. Commercial benchmarking, potential new REACH codes that are available, or maybe electrification incentives, and then also requiring solar on commercial buildings. And if there are any of these items that the commission is interested in hearing more about, like I said, we'd be happy to come back and update the commission as appropriate. On the transportation sector, there's been some recent improvements with the launch of the South Bay Bus Rapid Transit. As well as some of the, we've done some studies with SANDAG about how to reduce VNTs from employee commute, and then also the recent launching of the bike and scooter sharing ordinance as well to help that first and last mile emission services. And what currently underway is the Urban Core Specific Plan, working with MTS to redevelop the city's old public works yard. Which is a transit, you know, it doesn't get much closer to transit than that site right there, and it's a really great opportunity to create some land use that has lower VMT emissions associated with it. Also in the process is engineering's efforts to combine the bike and pedestrian master plan into one active transportation plan, They've done numerous community outreach at events, South Bay Earth Day, Harbor Fest, as well as at other community events and online, looking at where are the gaps in the current infrastructure out in the community, and how can this plan best provide that for alternative transportation, and this is specifically the active transportation. And then the last sector, the waste reduction, we've rolled out a few zero waste events like South Bay Earth Day and the employee health or barbecue, as well as expanded organics collection of phase one, which is collecting food waste from a select number of commercial businesses in the community and composting that. But there is still progress to be made. We still have to adopt a zero waste policy overall. We've done a few elements, but we want to pass that overall policy. And then also a zero waste business certificate, which will probably be adopted before the zero waste plan. And the note here just calls out that there has been, as you might have heard in some of the news, some recent changes in what kind of recycled content China and some of the other countries are accepting. And that has caused disruption in the market, and we're also in the process of a rate adjustment because of that decrease in the amount of revenue that the hauler is able to get back for those recycled products. And so they're trying to kind of stabilize that market right now, but it is, you know, it's always challenging to do new initiatives with less funding coming in, so that is a challenge. And then finally, just our general outreach. We've created the Chula Vista Climate Action Challenge, which is a website that allows any Chula Vista resident to create a profile, learn about their carbon baseline, and then learn about actions they can take, including local resources, and also to work together. It's a social website, so there is both community teams or community groups as well as teams. If anyone, there's a few recreation department, there's a mayor community group, a few other groups around the region. I would definitely encourage you all as residents to check out the challenge. It's on our CLEAN website. You go there and there's just a logo you click on to join. And then you can, you know, like I said, learn about actions in our climate action plan as well as resources to help residents take those actions. So there's definitely, we're trying to get the information beyond just a climate action plan document and get it into the community. And then the last is looking forward, post-2020. Our climate action plan really goes up to 2020, not much beyond it. We just assume what we're doing in 2020 continues, but we know there'll be new actions that we'll have to take. Looking to meet the state's goal of a 40% reduction below 2020 levels by 2030, 80% below 2020 levels by 2050. That's a very ambitious chart right there, and so we know that we'll be looking. We're doing some stakeholder outreach right now, but we know that there'll be updates to the climate action plan, and we're looking to evaluate what policies do we need to put in place to help us reach these more long-term goals. And to that goal, I'll just call out the Climate Change Working Group is holding a public forum next month at the libraries, one at the Civic Center and one at the Otay Ranch Library. We'll have interactive poster sessions as well as a presentation from regional climate experts. And also a online survey, which is live right now. If anyone does want to provide some of that early feedback, we'd be happy to hear it. But there is opportunities for residents to both provide us information on how we're doing on the actions we've said we're going to do, as well as are there new actions that we should be considering. We've never used a consultant for our climate action plans, except for the very first one that was adopted in 2000. And we rely a lot on our community to provide us ideas and let us know what they're interested in. So this very much aligns with kind of the community-based effort or planning process that we've done for climate action plan in the past, and look forward to talking about more actions with our community members. And that is the last slide. I didn't have my contact information, but feel free to reach out to the staff and they can connect you, or I have some cards here if anyone would like that.
Any questions to the staff?
Yeah, I have some questions. Is that one is, could we get a copy of that presentation, which is really excellent, sent to all of us? So that way we could have it so we could follow up.
Yeah, I saved a copy on the laptop, so...
Okay, I can forward it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. So the reason why this came up is that at our last meeting, we had a project development proposal, and the question came up about solar PV as part of the project design. And so the question, we kind of said, we kind of put that aside and asked for this, because I specifically wanted to know how the climate action plan was being incorporated into the design guidelines of the city for prospective projects, such as high density multifamily dwelling projects, and now you pointed out commercial. So I just want to make sure that I heard you correctly, is that come January 2020, all residential, and please correct me if I'm wrong, any future residential and or commercial projects that come before this planning commission needs to address solar PV as part of its project design?
Only residential.
Only residential.
Only residential. Commercial, the state has set a goal for 2030.
Okay.
It's also, our climate action plan talks about requiring solar on residential and commercial buildings.
Okay.
We're going to be addressing the residential first because that's the state requirement by this code cycle. But that being said, if there is opportunities to adopt an earlier requirement before 2030, and I, as a staff, I do think there are some of those opportunities. We'll definitely be looking at taking them. I can say when we looked at adopting an early requirement for residential to require it a year early, you know, it's very cost effective to add solar on new construction.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that the city would add solar on our new construction when we build a new building,
right?
Because it makes sense for us as a tenant of that building to have solar on there, aside from our environmental goals, which are also important. So it's definitely something that we would encourage. It's not requirement yet, but, you know, we would definitely encourage it.
Commissioner Zaker?
What's the likelihood of the city of Chula Vista getting ahead of the state mandate for 2030? I mean, has that ever happened where we say, well, we understand the state says this, but we're going to kind of come...
Yeah, so right now our exterior commercial lighting ordinance that we have is an early adoption of the state's 2019 code. In the past, we've adopted more general reach codes where all developments have to be 10 or 15% more efficient than the current code, which in effect is kind of just bringing in future code elements from that. So I'd say we definitely have a history of that. But that being said, again, anytime we require building owners to make improvements, that comes at a cost to those building owners. And even if it's something that we know is in the long term cost effective or whatnot, there still is barriers to enacting those requirements. And so it is more of a challenge, and it's one where our staff has to kind of put a lot of pieces in place before we can adopt requirements like that. But it is something that we are working on.
Can I ask one last question? No, does any
commissioner
have any? I didn't see it. Okay, one last question. You talked briefly about the landscaping and the LED ordinance. So with regard to the landscaping, is that ordinance incorporated in some of the design guidelines of the city? For example, a lot of the projects, well, since my short tenure here, every project has a landscaping design element to it. So is this landscaping ordinance incorporated into the design guidelines? You know, for example, you know, water efficient plants, top of my head.
Is your escaping?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I believe it is. So like I said, we updated our ordinance in 2015. So after that update, any new projects had to meet, I believe it was about 20% more efficient or less water. Any new projects, I believe residential or commercial, had to meet that newer, more stringent landscape requirement.
Okay.
And so that is something that is currently code.
Okay.
Commissioner De La Rosa?
Just for clarification, you said that commercial will come later in regards to photovoltaic, I guess, or
yes.
PV. But does that include multifamily, or is that under the residential? Because I think the question is multifamily, not commercial. Would that not be separate uses?
I believe multifamily will be coming with commercial.
So they're going. It's going with commercial.
Yeah, I don't believe. I'm fairly certain. Although, yeah,
because I think
it is just single family that is required.
Okay. And I think that's the clarification we're looking for in terms of the building.
Let me double check, and I can follow up with staff to confirm that. But I do believe it's only single family.
Okay, and I think that's the clarification we're looking for, because we were dealing with a multi-family unit complex, and I think that's usually what comes to the question.
I think it's all residential, multi-family, it's included in that.
Effective 2020, multi-family.
To clarify, Commissioner Suarez, not everything that comes into the commission after January 1st is going to have PV included, because if it's submitted to the city before... Mm-hmm. January 1st, it's still
right, gotcha.
So anything that's submitted
after, right, gotcha.
I think that's a clarification.
That would be a good clarification. Yeah.
Well, the,
eventually it'll be that way, though.
Eventually,
yes. Eventually it'll be all this.
Could I ask a question, Corey? When you say it's going to be quiet after January 2020, are you making code changes or what?
I hope what I said was effectively required, because it's not a pure requirement. The code does not say you have to install solar PV systems on there. What it says is you have to meet this level of energy. You cannot go above this level of energy. And the quickest and easiest way to do that would be to say, well, I'm going to go above it and bring it down with solar. That being said, if you wanted to make a very efficient, you know, like passive energy efficient home, I believe there could be opportunities for that in the code. And what we'll be doing is not necessarily, it's happening through the regular code update cycle. So we're at the end of our 3-year 2016 code. So the next code will be coming in effective 2020. And as a part of that state code, there will be, like I said, this requirement for effectively a PV system on new single-family residential. And I'll confirm if that does extend to the multifamily as well.
I have a question. So I've been looking at the greenhouse gas reductions over time.
Mm-hmm.
How are VMTs, how are vehicles miles traveled as a city? Like, are those going down in congruence with the greenhouse gas emissions that we're anticipating? Or because I know a lot of municipalities in the United States region, I think VMTs are going up. But I just want to see how Chula Vista fares in that regard, especially with our population generally going far away for work.
it's a really good question. And that's actually one of the challenges and why we don't have a 2016 inventory yet, is because of that VMT data. From our last 2014 inventory, it does look like our VMTs went down from 2012.
Okay.
But again, I'm really hopeful that we'll have that second data point to confirm that it was a more of a real reduction in VMT and not a modeling or data methodology reduction, which is very possible. We only have the limited Sandag series VMT data, and so there's not a wide variety of data that we can select from when that one is taking longer to create or whatnot. But we have seen VMT reductions in our most recent inventory, and we'll have to wait until we get the updated information to see if that continues.
I'd be curious whenever that's ready if you could share that with the commission, because
yeah.
A lot of our projects, it's always nice to know how you're traveling out and staying in.
One thing I'll mention about how we calculate emissions from transportation sector, we do what's called origin and destination modeling, or I should say we Sandag does origin and destination modeling for us. And what that means is we look at where the trips are going in our community. Those trips that stay within our community, start and end in Chula Vista, we take 100% of those emissions and include them in our inventory. If they start in Chula Vista and outside, or vice versa, we take 50% of those emissions and include them in our inventory. And then cars that completely go through Chula Vista and don't start or stop in Chula Vista, we do not include those emissions in our inventory. So it is designed to really connect land use planning you know, they're coming or starting in Chula Vista for a reason. So we're connecting that, and hopefully that will help with some of the VMT reductions.
Commissioner De La Rosa?
I just wanted to recap in terms of, it sounds like the cap and the code that enforces that in terms of projects allows flexibility, a menu for the developer to reach a certain threshold in terms of energy savings. I guess what would be helpful in clarifying is if that's part of the decision criteria right now, these projects be valued, and it sounds like Steve is saying no, so it looks like it will be 2020, because I think that's what we're trying to determine in terms of what criteria or what the developer in terms of they may be meeting the criteria, how did they meet that criteria, because the question is whether it's photovoltaic, which they don't necessarily, like you said, have to do if they meet that threshold. And I think that's really the question that we were looking to answer. So it's not so much photovoltaic, it's if they're meeting that threshold, then it's not really for us as a commission to say, you have to put X.
It's
a menu.
Building apartment reviews all the energy use, and they have a formula, right? That's what they're going to... That's part of the building apartment's jobs to make sure that happens. So
right, but it goes to the commissioner's question in terms of he was looking for photovoltaic, and was that an option, and did they pursue that option? But it's a menu of options that they can look at, and I think that was a question asked, and that's what we were looking for clarity on.
Yeah, unlike in some other jurisdictions where the climate action plans are CEQA tiered, you know, they have checklists where it's, you know, it says you require solar photovoltaic in the climate action plan. Do you require it on your project? It's not necessarily a one-for-one, although I would argue it's a very good roadmap for what we would like to see in projects. I think the kind of what I try to think about is, you know, not necessarily the short-term goals, but how are we aligned with these more long-term goals? And there is a number of ways that we can see or see reductions over time, but it's that downward trend that we want to be seeing the most. So if they're using, you know, if they're planning on using a lot of grid renewable or grid electricity, is that grid going to be getting cleaner over time, and will those emissions go down? I think one big area that we're looking at right now is how are we looking at and developing natural gas infrastructure. Unlike the electrical grid that we know is going to get more clean over time, natural gas emissions stay with us and can be kind of a legacy of fossil fuel emissions in use. So, you know, how do we make sure that our buildings that, you know, have a time associated with them are going to be complying with that? And, you know, that can also, there can be fuel switching down the road, but that's definitely one of the things that we're looking at right now.
One last question, if I may. Is that there was a slide that I think it was the transportation that related to the urban core specific plan. There it is, right. I was wondering, is that going to culminate in an amendment to that plan? And if so, wouldn't that amendment then come before the planning commission?
I can't say that. The plan already calls for that in that particular location. That's a transit focus area right by the trolley. So it's been identified
already.
Analyzed, and
okay.
It's got environmental clearance.
Okay. So just the actualization of what's already there. Okay. Because I haven't read that plan in quite a while. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that was a great presentation. But if we could get a copy of that, that'd be great.
Cool. All right. Item 2, well done. Thank you for being here today. We're now going to begin with DR19003. This is a design review consideration of a single-story building for 145,500 square feet consisting of commercial, industrial, and RV space with associated parking on approximately 2.79 acres located at 116 7th Street. This is the north portion of the parcel, so this is a lot 6 of the Otay River Business Park specific plan. All right, staff, take it away.
Thank you. Good evening, Chair Gutierrez and members of the commission. The two projects before you this evening are requests for design review approval of the first two commercial projects within the recently adopted 53-acre Otay River Business Park specific plan area. So what you see in this slide is the overall outline, 53 acres, and you can see it's bordered by 4th Avenue, Main Street, Broadway, and lots 6 and 7 are then shown. These are actually future lots because they currently are going through the final map processing right now. So So this first request is for the design review approval of a single-story building totaling 43,500 square feet of commercial industrial lease space with associated parking. The project site is 2.79 acres and is identified as Future Lot 6. And it is surrounded on all sides by vacant properties within the Otay River Business Park. In terms of site layout, the main parking field is located adjacent and west of the main building entrance with a small amount of parking located towards the rear. The main parking field will be screened by heavy landscaping consisting of a combination of hedges and trees along 7th Street and Faber Street. In terms of site access and circulation, the primary vehicular access to the site is off a joint access driveway off of Faber Street to the south. Enhanced paving will be provided at the driveway entrance. Two secondary points of access will occur via a 30-foot wide private street coming off of 7th Street along the northern portion of the site. The design guidelines require adequate truck turning and maneuvering throughout the lot and allow for provisions for joint access with adjacent lots. As shown in the site plan, the site design of the project provides adequate circulation for large semi-truck access and truck maneuvering. Large trucks may enter and exit from either 7th Street or Faber Street and circulate around the building without requiring backing up.
I'm sorry, let me interrupt. Can you orientate it? Oh, there it is. I guess that's... I'm just looking at the orientation of the north south, the way the project sits.
Yeah, my land is...
I can't. So that's fourth to our right then, so that building is sitting
this
long ways north from south.
Yeah, this is Main Street would be way up here.
No, I just wondering where that private street was, but
yeah,
that private street is part of the development.
This would be 7th Street, and again, this is kind of in the mid part of the project, and then Lot 7, which we'll talk about afterwards, it goes all the way up to 4th. So the proposed building is purposely laid out near the rear of the parcel to take advantage of back-to-back loading door docks with adjacent parcel to the east, and in order to provide truck access and bays that can be accessed by reciprocal ingress-egress proposed along Future Faber Street to the south. This next slide shows the adopted specific plan being divided up into 5 planning areas which constitute the zoning for the property. As shown on this slide, Future Lot 6 is within planning area PA2, which is considered a transitional use area. The project complies with all the development standards of the zone. As shown on this table, a total of 96 parking spaces are provided for the project. Because there are no actual proposed tenants at this time, the applicant has projected a breakdown of uses 45% office, 35% manufacturing, and 20% warehouse. Applying the required parking ratios outlined in the specific plan, a total of 94 spaces would be required. In terms of design criteria, the design guidelines do not adopt any one particular architectural style. The applicant is proposing a modern design with neutral coloring, but providing high contrast in the finish selected for the aesthetics. In terms of building massing and scale, the design guidelines call for staggering of heights and wall planes, as well as varied roof form, mass, and shape. As shown on the building elevations, variations of roof heights will provide interest in character and various shadows. Wall planes have been staggered to help draw attention to the entries and architectural features. And as a component of the modern architectural design, colorful pop-outs with concrete reveals will be provided to emphasize the entry areas. The design guidelines also call for a sense of pedestrian scale at the ground level of the building. The applicant has carefully coordinated the building design and landscaping to provide a cohesive design and provide a sense of pedestrian scale at the ground level. In compliance with the design guidelines, the site shows the proposed colors and materials, which are high quality, durable, and require low maintenance. The building will be painted concrete tilt-up. The building finish will withstand all weather conditions and be low maintenance. Metal awnings are also durable and low maintenance. Staff recommends the Planning Commission adopt the resolution approving design review permit DR 19-0003 subject to the conditions in the resolution. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any clarifying questions for staff?
And the applicant's here as well if you have any questions, if they want to say anything.
Did I hear you say that there are currently no potential tenants identified to the property? So the breakdown that you gave us, it's more of a kind of
that's my understanding. I mean, the applicant is here. If you like to, see if they
just wanted to make sure that I heard you correctly.
Yeah, that's right. It's a spec building. Right.
So we'll be checking the parking when they actually come in for the tenant improvements.
Commissioner De La Rosa?
That was really the basis of my question as well. I wasn't understanding, it didn't look like apples to apples. I understand they don't have a tenant, but I guess I'm asking, do they meet those ratios if those ratios were based on the use? I'm not quite, this was, I'm still trying to figure out the apples to apples. Like, I'm not, it's not.
So if you go back to, so under parking required, it gives you the different ratios for the office, for the manufacturing, and for the warehouse. So we apply those particular standards based upon the percentage that they're projecting, then they come up with a requirement for the 94
spaces. So you multiply by the percentage of the use that
right.
they were identifying mm-hmm. on the proposed use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there such a case where they go over? Because that's pretty tight from where it is.
Well, we would check that as part of, they would come through for an actual tenant improvement.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. When they actually have a tenant to go in there, and then we would do a routing and a plan check and plan.
So then the assumption is that the proposed use is a realistic percentage that's mm-hmm. being proposed. I'm just trying to understand.
We're relying on the developer to tell us that's typically what their projects break down as. So
an example, we're talking with General Dynamics right now for half of one of the buildings. So they actually, their office use is about 25%, so it's less than kind of what we had projected. Until we get these, you know, guys, we'll move them around, or maybe they don't fit if they have too high of a office requirement and we can't make their off, you know, their parking work. But typically, the guys that we're seeing right now, we've got a couple produce guys, we've got a printing guy, General Dynamics, we got Cox. And they all fit within this criteria or
okay.
less.
That helps with the context in terms of how to do it. That's
any clarifying questions? The Vice Chair Zager?
Well, I mean, I have a question, but I'm wondering if you should move it.
If you want to wait, it's
going to be okay if we ask. My question actually is to make sure that we assist you in any way that we can so that you don't get hung up on parking requirements in the future should the potential users turn out to be something different than what you anticipate. Let me give you a hypothetical. In your calculation, I think you're saying you're anticipating 35% of the use to be an office. Let us just say, for the sake of argument, a great company comes to you, because you know we're hoping for more commercial industrial employment. I'm an economic development guy, so every time you bring something like this, it gets my attention. So if a tenant came, and let's say it was a great tenant, and it was 80% office use, how would that work when they come for their TI permit?
Can they do like a shared agreement with the rest
yeah.
of the
exactly.
A shared agreement, okay.
Like you can probably balance with the other buildings?
We would definitely allow that. Our code allows that.
There's a way
it's flexible. There's demand, you know, parking demand management. There are off-site parking agreements.
Okay. So there's a provision. There's a way that we can do this.
So it allows flexibility. Doesn't preclude a particular case.
Yeah, we wouldn't kick somebody out just because they needed 80% off. We'd try. Typically, if it was 80% office, they wouldn't be using all the truck doors. So there's a whole bunch of parking that we could create in the back to maybe get pretty close to what that would be, but.
I think we're asking because it was a set requirement or stat that was given to us. We want to make sure that it doesn't box you in and there's flexibility
yeah.
and at the same time doesn't create a situation that's not amenable to the surroundings, but it sounds like we have a lot of flexibility in that.
That comes up pretty often, so we'd like to build that flexibility in.
So
okay.
That's
any other clarifying questions from my colleagues? Okay, we're going to open up a public hearing, which is basically applicant. Would you like to present on anything? Mm-hmm. Just see that.
We're good.
We
just got a lot of tenant activity. We want to get these things going.
That's perfect. Yeah. So, all right, we're going to close public comment. And then we're going to begin deliberations. Colleagues, feel free to raise your hands, and I'll call you as you raise your hands. There you go. We have a resident architect, Commissioner Nava. Go for it, sir. Kick us off.
I think it's a very straightforward project. I mean, it complies with everything that was being there. Are we deliberating?
I'll
like to make a motion to approve.
Yeah, we have a motion by Commissioner Nava to approve the project.
A second.
We have a second by Commissioner De La Rosa. All those in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it, and we'll vote it unanimously for the record. And congratulations.
Thank you.
Now you're back again for another design review item, which, as you know, are the most hopefully uncontroversial items ever. This is design review 19-0004, design review consideration of a single-story building holding 52,000 square feet consisting of commercial industrial lease space with associated parking on approximately 3.2 acres located at 116 7th Avenue.
This is going to seem remarkably similar. So.
Can you just say ditto?
You could. You can wave the presentation. Jeff, you go real fast.
No. Should we wave the presentation? Can I? Is that a thing? Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to wave the presentation.
You don't have to make a motion. Consensus?
Is there a consensus that we waive the presentation?
Yeah.
Okay, consensus.
Okay.
All right, and then so that's going to bring us to open comment, which we'll have none. Any questions from the developer?
We'll open the public hearing.
Open public hearing? Opening it. Anything from y'all?
No.
Okay, closing public hearing. And then deliberation again. Mr. Zaker?
I'm excited. Thank you.
We are too.
We need more companies out here. We need more jobs. So thank you for that. And it is a pretty straightforward project. So, just one question: when is your anticipated completion date, so that I can get even more excited?
For the entire project, or just the first phase? We're doing a couple buildings at a time, and. With the activity that we have right now on these two buildings, we're going to immediately start the design on the next two buildings.
Sure.
And I think Cox is one of the tenants that we may take one of our lots that has a bigger building, put a smaller building, and they need a yard space. So we'd be coming in for something different. But I don't think our design criteria is not set in stone with those buildings. I mean, if we get somebody like a General Dynamics that needs 150,000 feet, then we'll combine a few lots together. But we're starting, I'm hoping we'd start end of September. Right? Yeah. On these first two buildings.
Yeah. I have one question. Is that
the
vacant lot, that whole area, because it was all subdivided into various parcels, and this is going to take up two of the parcels. Does staff know, or can they tell us if there's any other prospective developments that's going to be coming to us with regard to the other remainder of that vacant lot?
Well, it's all under Sudbury.
We own it all.
Yeah, they
do. Oh, you own it all?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so as soon as we get tenants, we'll go through as many buildings as we can. I'd like to build it all right now, myself.
Oh, okay. I wasn't worried if you own the whole thing. Okay, great. Yeah.
Commissioner Wilburn?
Your retail mixed use on the along Main Street, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And do you have a...
Yeah, there's a car wash, a 7-Eleven, and then we have a retail building that we're hoping to get a Starbucks drive-through, and then, probably a food.
Three other little.
Yeah, it's just a small building. It's 5,500 square feet.
Because those are under 20,000, you wouldn't see them.
Right.
They're just
there.
Yeah.
And
then
on the 15 or 20,000? What's the
120.
Under 20?
Is that a design?
Mr. De La Rosa?
I'm You're adjacent to the Otay Valley Regional Park, which I'm sure you are very well aware of.
Yes.
And I'm just asking in terms of, so that property line is the footprint of where the development footprint's going to be. Do you own, I'm trying to figure out where the boundary to the park is. And
we own a piece that goes down in towards the river. It's a separate parcel.
So.
And then there's the park piece that hopefully the city is going to turn into a park.
I guess that's what I was going to ask in terms of, there's a piece that's under your ownership that will be...
Right.
Can you share with that?
We're in under contract with a group called River Partners that are working in conjunction with the city and their parks department. The River Partners really want to own and fix up the river bottom, what I would call it, the connecting piece to the Otay River. And so... we're under contract to sell that land to them, and hopefully the city's going to participate and buy the park as well.
I think that's great. So that'll be like revegetated or on the
right.
Part of
be restored.
Park.
It'll be restored
in terms of part of the river.
Yeah.
Is there going to be, because that's a kind of a gateway into the park, is there going to be any signage in terms
there
of...
There is signage. We have a sign that says entrance to the regional park. And again, if the park comes to fruition, there'll be direct access from that and with some parking, et cetera.
Perfect. That's what I was at. That's what I was at. Thank you. I think that's a great thing that you guys were able to work that out with the city, or at least
extracted for 13 acres of prime industrial land. You guys should talk back to the. You should talk to the city if you want me to build more buildings, and don't build a park there. That's not to me. It's not a great place to put a park. But my arm was twisted to give them that land. So
you're paying the staff. That's
well, it looks like you're getting a big project, and there'll be some presenting.
Yes,
it's important to note that park is covered environmentally. They graciously covered that in their MND.
Yeah, it sounds like they were partners in terms of
environmental clearance. Which is huge to actually go out and build a park.
Yeah. Do we need to make a motion to
approve the motion?
Would you like a motion to approve?
We have a motion by Commissioner De La Rosa to approve the project.
Second.
We have a second by Commissioner Zaker. All commissioners present, please vote. Aye. Aye. Ayes have it. We have a unanimous decision. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you.
On your project. Which brings us to item number 5. Election of Planning Commissioner Representative to the Growth Management Oversight Commission. Commissioner Vice Chair Zaker has been nothing short of incredible in serving the last 2 years as the GMOC representative from the Planning Commission. But with that, he is looking to do something else, as he's done his tour of duty twice. Is there anybody interested in serving on the GMOC or any nominations? I've served on the GMOC too, and it's really cool. So if you're interested in it,
I was going to nominate you, Gabe.
Oh, I've done it before. I did 2 years as well.
Well, if I may, I'm willing to do it if somebody will swap out with me to be on the Bayshore.
The Bayfront.
The Bayfront, yeah. If somebody will swap out, because that's like quarterly, if at all, that they ever meet. I talked to the core staff. Yeah, Cameron.
We can only do what's on that. We can only do what's on the agenda for today. So far for that, so get you to that point. But
I see where that's going.
So we can,
we can find somebody.
But all things considered, anybody, any takers?
Mr. Chairman, if I may put my salesmanship hat on.
Yes, sir.
Let me share with you, fellow commissioners. I was kind of hesitant to do this for the 3 years. I think I've said the 2 years. But I was pleasantly surprised, and I'll tell you, having a planning commission on GMOC is critical, I think, to that group in order to develop a well-thought-out plan that goes to the city council. I don't know if you were at the last, we were all there at the joint meeting.
Yes.
There's actually been a great change in their schedule, which I think really now gives the GMOC some clout and some teeth, as they call it. Because in the past, the way it used to work is, we would do all the work, we would go through all the deliberation, we'd present the report, but the budget, the city manager had to create the budget. So now they've actually changed the schedule
in anticipation of delivering the report in January timeframe. So, of course, you know, I love serving here as a planning commission, but I'll tell you, being on the GMOC was absolutely an educational kind of a growth opportunity, because you get to really interact with department directors one-on-one. So again, you know, we went through it with public safety, parks and rec. So again, if any of you really want to kind of get on the other side of here, we plan. On the other side, it's really about managing the resources, the impact of the community. I would encourage you to consider it if that's what you're looking for.
I echo Commissioner Zaker's comments. I think I'm a better planning commissioner because of the fact that I served on the GMOC. It was incredibly educational, and you as a planning commissioner are incredibly valued on that commission because you're able to provide guidance on what we're seeing, what we're looking at, and you have an idea of a project. So it really is a symbiotic relationship for both commissions' benefit. So looking around, wow.
No takers.
No takers?
I think it's great, but I don't have the time. It's just...
Yeah, we have a meeting schedule.
This is just
a So basically,
they've actually condensed it, so it's a shorter period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they start September and it runs through January.
Yeah, it's really.
And then the rest is dark. Actually, there's really nothing going on. It's about three months of meetings. We used to meet over a course of about 9 months,
mm-hmm.
once a month or twice a month or something, but they've changed
the
schedule now.
Condensed. Because once the budget's adopted in January, and then it's really 6 months of nothing until it's time to
visit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like a half-year thing.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
It's really good. Bueller?
Good sell job, Gabe.
I love the GMOC. It was really cool. I had to suggest someone else to consider it. Making nominations. I'd like to nominate. No, everybody's going to hate me if I nominate you.
You could do rock paper scissors.
I mean, someone needs to say that they...
Commissioner Torres, you had an interest in it. Is it okay if we look at moving your old thing? We can move it to a lesser date to see if someone... later date, let's see if someone else is interested in serving on it. Per your previous comment.
Yeah, because I can... Well, I mean, that other committee is that, talking with staff, it's like they hardly meet at all, if ever, really.
Okay.
We haven't met. We've only met since I've been on there. We've met twice.
So would you be interested, and then we can have it a later agendized date. We can have the other commission come up to move on to a separate commission.
Okay, I'm willing to take it.
Okay, so Commissioner Torres for the GMOC. Do we have a second? So we have a motion made by Commissioner Gutierrez, seconded by Commissioner Milburn. All those present? Aye. Congratulations. The GMOC is better now.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations.
We'll see what happens.
So we have a new GMOC. We have the new double commissioner, as I call him or her. Okay, so congratulations on that. Next, we have director's report. Do we have anything from our...
No report.
We have that, and then now we have commission's comments. I saw some notes.
Yeah.
I think an email. So would you like to lead us?
Yeah, okay. If I may... We should do this. Is that what I did? Is that after I've only been here, you broke briefly, right? This is like my fifth meeting, and it kind of dawned on me as through the course of our deliberations, and so I followed up with the city clerk to ask whether or not the planning commission had ever developed any bylaws, which it's allowed to do under the city charter and the municipal code. Okay, and to help guide its deliberative process, because I don't know if the commissioners here present, you know, authority or under the city's municipal codes, and so I put this together, this little cheat sheet, this little white paper. Okay, and the reason why that I thought about that is when I was the chair of the districting commission. We, in fact, did establish bylaws. And those bylaws, which would be somewhat different from this, guided us in many areas. For example, one of the last meetings that we had, I posed the issue to Mr. Shirey, our counsel, about us asking staff questions, clarifying questions before the meeting, and you advised that, you know, you would prefer that that not be done, which is cool. I mean, you know, so, but that should be in our bylaws. Another thing, for example, is ex parte communications. Okay, when I was the chair of the district commission, we did not allow ex parte communications with anybody relative to development of maps or testimony that they were going to be provided to the commission. And I don't know where this commission is on that, but for me, I would think that we would, similarly, we would not want to allow any commissioners to be talking to applicants mm-hmm. about agenda items before they it comes to the commission, and we should put that in writing. But the thing that I just think that it would help us, and again, this is just me, okay, and if you guys, because you've been here a lot longer than me, okay, and you guys know the rules of the road, so to speak, and I don't, is that whether or not it would be good for the commission to, you know, partake in this exercise so that it gets a little bit more clarity as to what really is our discretionary authority under the municipal codes, under the city charter, in conformance or in accordance with state law. And, you know, for example, like today, okay, and I'll just real quickly give you a case point, is that we were talking today about design review approval of this project, okay? In the municipal code, it says under this particular municipal code section, the planning commission shall approve, conditionally approve, or deny such plans. The planning commission shall base its findings and actions on the design review provisions of the affected design manuals of the city. So, what does it mean to conditionally approve? And for case in point, is that remember when the RV park came up? Okay, and we as the commission, we wanted X things to be done, the modification of the wall, some foliage, you know, and blah blah blah, to hide the appearance of the RV park on Otay Lakes Road. Are we allowed to do that? I mean, as part of our conditional approval, that we can make such modifications to the design of the project? I don't know. There's nothing in the municipal code that would suggest that we were allowed to do it, but yet we did do it. And the issue of the photovoltaic in the high-density multifamily dwellings, again, could we stipulate that yeah, as part of a conditional approval, that has to be part of the project? If not, we need to have some kind of guidelines to help us in our process. Case in point, it talks about the precise plan approval that we can actually deny and or amend precise plans that come to us. I don't know if you guys knew that, okay? So, and also with regard to projects, plan unit development, that we can actually, case in point, in taking action, the commission may recommend to the city council denial of a plan unit development, may recommend approval of a plan unit development as submitted, or may recommend approval of a plan unit development subject to additional conditions. Okay, and the case came up with regard to the project that was on over on the east side next to the Otay Mesa Mall. Okay, remember the whole issue about the park and, you know, and the issue about the Quimby Act and everything else came up. So if we were to, you know, what does it mean? What discretion authority do we have to amend these projects? You know what I mean?
You bring up a couple of great points, right? Some of them could be answered by Mr. Shirey, which are like regarding ex parte communications and like some of those kinds of things. And Mr. Shirey, I'd like you to answer those in a question in a moment. But also you have some questions regarding kind of like what is some of it's like, you know, I feel like the American Planning Association, like going to a good, like there's a meeting that I went to a while ago, and it was like, so now you're a commissioner and you go there and you learn and you basically you go in there and you kind of learn the ropes from the beginning. Our commission doesn't really do that. I think that we all have, I think all of us are members of the American Planning Association. If I recall, the director of the department, he actually pays for us to all be APA members. Mm-hmm. And the thing is not all of us go to those meetings, or you know, in your case, you just got appointed, so it's like, It's not like the meeting was there waiting for you, and you go to that, and report to that, and go do a day there, and then you come here. It's kind of like, you know, a little bit of trial by fire. So to a certain extent, like staff, I mean, to that end, some of it's bylaws, right? Or maybe even some of it's simply, like, rules of the road, or even, like, because this is kind of a commission you get kind of thrown into, and it's not one where where you really get, like, a solid briefing in the beginning. So I guess the two things, I'd like to have you address some of the answers regarding ex parte, Mr. Shirey, and then if staff could talk about, you know, I guess APA.
Well, a couple things. Yeah. First off, this is not on the agenda.
It's posed as a question.
We can't keep talking about it.
Oh, we can? Gotcha.
No.
Okay.
So what was the question, though, in terms of...
Yeah, it was...
Well, the question is this. I mean, that's why it was under commissioner's comments, and so that's why I asked... The question is this. Should the planning commission establish bylaws to serve as guidelines addressing its discretionary authority not explicitly set forth in the city charter and municipal codes that is allowable under applicable state law? So if you're saying, council, that this we cannot talk about this as presented, then I'd like to agendize it.
Here's what I think we can do. Here's what we can legally do. You as the commissioner, because you have a commissioner comment, can bring anything up, which you did. You also submitted documentation to the commission, which is now public record.
Right.
You then laid out kind of your thoughts on it, which I think is a good idea, so everyone knows what you're talking about.
Sure.
The problem is we can't get into a deliberative process about that.
Understood.
So the commission has now heard your comments on it and your thoughts. There's two ways we can handle this. One is, first of all, the commission has to be on board with this.
Mm-hmm.
So if the consensus, a majority consensus of the commission is on board, one way we could do this is the commission, through a consensus, can appoint a commission subcommittee to look into it. It would have to be a subcommittee of less than a quorum. Mm-hmm. So just for example, Mr. Torres and another commissioner or another two commissioners, should they want to do that.
Right.
That subcommittee can go off, work on this project, again, because if the commission majority consensus, is we want to look at heading in that direction,
right,
that subcommittee could work on it.
Right.
That subcommittee can then place it on the agenda to come back and talk about it. That's version one. Version two is, we don't do that right now, and if the commission wants to flesh this out some more, like with some of these questions about ex parte and about the law and whatever,
mm-hmm,
as a consensus now, the commission could put this back on the agenda, mm-hmm, under, let's say, again, under commissioner comment. But it'll be agendized as commissioner comment with exactly as what we're doing. We're going to talk about potential bylaws. And then we could have the discussion I think you want to have now at that meeting. So those are the two ways we could do it.
Sure.
And then if the consensus is, if four of the commissioners say, you know what, I don't think we really need bylaws because we've been doing this for a long time. We have to go by the code. Bylaws are really procedural, and it relates back to Chapter 2 of the code. We follow the city council procedures.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Sure.
If the consensus was that, then this would just die right now.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of the three options. I'll let you...
So my thoughts is that, you know, we generally follow the same procedures and bylaws as the city council. So that's why it hasn't been changed, is because we mirror that. You know, some of my colleagues will probably someday become mayor or something, so this is kind of like a good training ground. A lot of elected officials have come out of this commission, because, and also from a procedural standpoint, I try to run this as close as I can within reason to the city council meetings, Robert's Rules of Orders, you all speak when recognized by the chair kind of thing, right? And I speak when recognized by myself. So those are kind of how we work from a procedural standpoint, but in regards to some of your stuff that you were mentioning, Commissioner, we're seeing more like kind of like an APA workshop would really help you, like as it helped me in the past. So I'm not exactly certain that we need to go down this road where we do all this kind of bylaw stuff, especially with how much time it would be, especially time outside of here. I'm not sure from a procedural standpoint that's necessary. But I do think that that some kind of welcoming thing from staff, that kind of like health guide, you know, like maybe a meeting with the director, a meeting with department staff, for new commissioners coming on, should be something that staff can look at as going forward, or just some way to kind of, because a lot of us who got into these roles, it's really a trial by fire, and in your first 6 months are kind of like, and then you start.
So if I may, so that's okay with me, because the purpose of me was throwing the question for consideration. That being said, though, is that the League of California Cities actually has a annual like academy for new planning commissioners and for staff, and if that's the alternative, does the city provide the opportunity for new commissioners to go to this academy and have the expenses paid by the city, you know, for transportation, for not tuition, but, you know, the conference fees? I mean, because that's happening in January, I believe. And so, I don't know if De La Rosa might want to go to it, Commissioner De La Rosa, but I would like to go to it, again, to get that kind of familiarization, because it's not just for the it's for new commissioners, but also it brings into that the planners, you know, development directors. It brings a lot of high-level staff working with these new commissioners as part of the education process.
So,
we can't have a dialogue about this. So, is it just the
I mean, I think now we're talking about new commissioners' orientations.
I think in a lot of sense you're asking questions in regard to your role as a planning commissioner, as a new planning commissioner, and I think either through APA, I don't know if the city provides those resources or you can go on your own. I know some of those things are downloadable as well. It's like a title, and so you can walk through that. I think we're guided by the same code or conduct.
Well, we're not talking about bylaws anymore because I think
that's
city council.
That's my thoughts in terms of we're asking the consensus. But I do think that if a new commissioner is asking to be orientated in terms of.
Well, the staff come back to us at the next meeting or send us an email regarding any thoughts.
We can check that out. I don't know. I mean, it's not really a legal question, it's a policy question. But I think that, as appointed commissioners, the city would cover, just like they would cover an employee, you know, me going to the League of California City or Steve going to a league meeting. I think they do and would, but I don't know.
My personal experience is, I've been sent in other cities. Whether or not the city has the budget and wants to allocate the money, it's a question of the city manager answering that question. Is there money? It's a great idea. It's common practice. It hasn't been done here in at least a decade or longer.
I paid for myself when I went, and then additionally, I paid for myself. And then the second time I went, I was a speaker, so I got free.
You mean to that actual academy?
When I go speak at it, it's different. It's free.
Well, again, since we're not, you know, being advised not to talk about the bylaws, the point of it, again, is to clarify, for the commission to clarify for itself, what real discretion authority does the commission have with regard to exercising its authority? I mean, what discretion do we have? And I'm not sure that's really been fleshed out. That's my point.
Well, it's fleshed out when I try to guide the commission. If I think they're going in a way that's problematic for the city, it's one of my jobs here.
Okay.
Sometimes the commission might not like my answer, but that.
In staff's recommendation, it also states in terms of exactly what you're requesting in terms of what the action is, right? In terms of what, if we're weighing against a specific plan or if we're weighing as a design review. I also think that some of that's laid into the recommendation in terms of how staff sets that up and advises staff what the question is.
Analyzing a design review application based on the design guidelines of the city of Chula Vista, you can recommend conditions you want green versus red or some other plan. Mm-hmm. That's totally within your purview.
Right.
Is that summarized somewhere for a commissioner who wants to have
One good place, I don't know how, it's, I'm sure it's been updated every year, the Planning Commissioner's Handbook used to be put out by APA, I think. You could Google that. That might be a good place to start. We used to provide that back in the day.
APA?
I do APA stuff, frankly. I don't do League of Cities stuff. But anyway.
League of Cities.
So we have a couple things on the do you mind?
Sure.
We have a couple things on the table. I think the questions out there is does the city pay for commissioners to go to league functions for education purposes under their jurisdiction? Can you check on that or check with Tef Kelly Broughton, check on that as the director, and then it needs to be reported back to the commission?
Yes.
So that's number one. Number two is now we're backtracking to the bylaw issue, and what's the consensus? Is the consensus that the commission think going down the bylaw path is a good way to go or not a good way to go?
I think we maintain the city council procedural model, which we've always, which has been consistent with this commission as it's we mirror the city council's procedures. That's what the bylaws would be. Would be changing. Am I correct? It would be.
They would mostly be procedural. Yes. They'd be procedural.
So just the more we align ourselves with city council, I think that's fine. It keeps us. It gets easier for staff because we mirror city council meetings in that fashion. Mm-hmm. But to the extent that going back to the other thing, I do know that we're all. I do believe that staff pays for all of us to be members of the APA. So I want to say that as commissioners, we're all special commissioner members of the American Planning Association. And there's events and stuff, mm-hmm. and that's one of the ways I'm able to. So they do pay for that, to the extent that they'll pay for you to fly or
it's not
drive.
Just the chair.
No, that's all of us. I think we're all APA members.
Kelly.
Yeah. But that's something you wouldn't have known, because you asked. Now we know. So that's it's not really. I wish I would have told you, or I wish that it's not always delineated, right?
But there is a consensus on the bylaw thing, right? Was that?
No.
We're just gonna. Set that,
we're going to follow city council's guidelines and procedures. Right?
I don't want it to be a thing where we're doing way different thing. We're far off from the council path.
I just put the question out there, I just want a consensus
in the because I think that
to maintain it. Okay, do you want to maintain a meetings that are similar to the city council? Please vote if aye.
Yes.
Okay. Rather, it's unanimous. We all vote to continue to maintain procedures similar to city council meetings, as it's always been done. Good for staff, good for us, right? We understand city council meetings better because of it. But secondarily, the questions regarding staff, if they pay for that stuff, that's fine. But also, if we can have, and I'm not sure if his membership for the APA has been done for this year, but maybe we can look at getting Commissioner Torres, getting information for American Planning Association, and hopefully
I'll send to Patricia the announcement about that little academy for the League of California Cities.
Sure.
For new commissioners, planning commissioners.
That's great. Yeah. I think it's wonderful.
I think it's a great idea.
I'll tell you this.
Even if the city doesn't pay, maybe you just do an introduction, an orientation. I think it's a great idea. I didn't get it.
I didn't get it. I had to do it on my own.
I was coming from the same review, and I'm like, oh, this is totally different.
I'm a former political hack.
but I think it's good just to overall, you can make more educated decisions on all the items that come to the meeting. I think it's a good recommendation if it's hopefully the city. And for new commissioners. Right?
Or even if we do something in-house or something.
Yeah.
If it's an in-house one-pager or two-pager that staff has, I'm like, hey, here's your stuff, you should just know. Anything else? Any other comments unrelated to what we just talked about? Just anything from y'all? So, Max.
I was not here at the last planning commission, but reviewing the minutes, I see that one of the commissioners asked a question about the status of the psychiatric hospital when he was going before the planning commission. Was that ever discussed since I wasn't here?
That was my question, I believe.
Was there any response from staff on that?
We're not anywhere near.
It was not in the immediate future.
Yeah. Probably sometime next year.
Okay. All right. Good luck. Thank you.
Hopefully, I will be chair.
Or you will be chair.
But you all never get that. Okay. Hey, meeting dismissed. Thank you all for your great comments today and for running a good meeting. It's good seeing you again. Yeah, it's good to see you guys. Yes.
It's like, it did get hot until like 3 weeks ago.
It got hot, but exactly right.
Go back to work, yeah. I think I saw the
I'm not sure that the information should be available on the web. Patricia, Pat,
and
Patricia,